Laughing Eyes Kennel presents The Gypsy Musher with Iditarod and Yukon Quest veteran Hugh Neff. The Gypsy Musher will share stories from the trail, fortune-telling, and memories of mushing years past. Follow The Gypsy Musher on Twitter and visit our website at gypsymusher.com.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and on the line from the starting line of the Yukon Quest, Hugh Neff. Hugh, how's it going?
Pretty good, Robert. We're really not at the starting line. We're over here on Farmer's Loop with my buddy Sam Harrell. He's a photographer for the News Miner, which is a big paper here in town. He's nice enough to let us stay here and hanging out with two of my handler buddies, Jaime Vives. He just came in from Hilo, Hawaii. And my buddy Bruce Hagstrom, who's helping out last year as well, and Bruce is from Spokane. He's a teacher who's taking the year off. And got five of my main leaders in here as well, Jewel, Walter, Juanita, Delilah, and Nathan. And they're just chilling on the floor and enjoying a little bit of rest time before the big show begins tomorrow.
You know, we've been on the air now for about 3.5 months, and it pretty much all leads up to this, starting with the Yukon Quest, and then just a couple of weeks down the road from there is the Iditarod. So my first question to you, Hugh, is are you ready for this next 1,000-mile race?
You know I'm ready, man. I'm Hugh Neff. This is what we live for. I'm
there you go.
I'm looking out the window, dude, and the flurries are coming down hard, and maybe as a rookie musher 10 years ago, I would have been a little bit nervous seeing this blizzard out here, but 10 years later, this is my 20,000-mile race, and I'm looking at these flurries going, bring it on. This is going to be a fun time, and I'm sure my buddy Brent Sass and Lance and all the boys and ladies are looking forward to getting out there on the trail and letting the party begin.
So what's it look like? We were talking about last week about it being pretty dang warm over there in that part of the country. What's it looking like now?
Yeah, I mean, a week ago it was 50 below when we were doing vet checks, and now it's about 10 above and, you know, flurries coming down hard. They're saying 1 to 2 inches, but I'm thinking it's going to be more than that. You know, being a little bit older, I'm 44 now, I'm getting a little bit lazier. Not like I've never been lazy, but maybe I'm just getting even more relaxed in my attitude about being, you know, super competitive and all that. But for me, it's all about enjoying the journey and having fun out there. And so the trail might not be as smooth. It might be a little bit more of a slog, but 10, 20 above zero, that sounds fine to me. That's typical Iditarod weather. Plus, it's pretty darn warm, though.
What about your competitors? Anything that has come up in the last week that you want to share? I do want to talk a little bit about your friend, Brent Sass, in just a second, but anything you want to share about your buddies that are getting ready to run as well?
Yeah, and that's the way I look at those guys. We're family. We're comrades. I mean, we might be nitpicky with each other every once in a while, but if you're all about competing against everybody else, then you're missing the whole point of this, and you should really just be competing against yourself and trying to make yourself a better person, a better dog musher, and, you know, a better caretaker of your dogs. And I wish Brent well, everybody out there. For me, what makes this race a winner is the more teams we can get across that finish line. You know, the Quest is obviously the most difficult race in the world to finish year in, year out. Typically, barely, you know, half of the teams make it. So the more teams we can get to White Horse or wherever the finish line is going to be this year, the better. The reason I make that comment is, from what I heard, it was raining in White Horse yesterday. So there's been years in the past where they actually had to shorten the race a little bit just because the Yukon River got a little bit too dangerous with open water. But we'll just have to see how it goes.
So what is the atmosphere like in terms of media attention and that sort of thing? I know we talked a show or two ago about, you know, the Iditarod being this huge media spectacle. What's it like there in Fairbanks this week with everybody there?
Oh, it was amazing last night. Meet the Musher is probably the biggest output of fans that I've ever seen. Meet the Musher over at the Alpine Hotel over there by the airport. It was just hundreds and hundreds, probably over 1,000 people there, just one after another coming up. Everybody had signed the Quest posters and lots of different media. It was interesting because we're all on a table. I was sitting next to Alan Moore and Misha Peterson, and on the other side of Alan was Lance, and then you had Sonny Linder. And so it was funny because everybody wants us to autograph their posters, and then right when they got up to Lance, they'd be pulling out their cameras wanting a picture with Lance, which, you know, I've known him long enough, so I'm sort of used to that scene. But as far as I go, I don't really consider myself to be too pretty of a person. I'd rather have dogs taking, or people taking pictures of my dogs rather than with me, and hopefully there'll be a lot of pictures taken of my dogs after this race is over with.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your dogs. We've started from the very beginning about this show being about the dogs. How are they looking now that they're getting ready to run their first big race of the year? I know you went down to do the Copper Basin, and that was canceled, and that would be, you know, just a quick mid-distance run. How are the dogs looking about 24 hours before starting time?
Because of the relatively cool temps, you know, 50 below, it's not a good idea to be training out at. We're a little bit low on miles in the last couple of weeks, but I've got a lot of experience. A lot of these guys are 5, 6 years old, and they've got 7 or 8,000 milers on them, so I'm not too worried about that. I've got 3 rookies. Everybody else has been here before, pretty much. The only new dog that I have to the whole scene, really, is Gringo, a dog I got from Johnny Baker. And John is a quality older dog, 6-year-old. But the same dogs have done this race the last few years, and they know what it's about. And definitely with the level of top competition, a.k.a. Brent, Alan, Jake, Lance, whoever, I'm not necessarily going to be pushing any buttons too early in this race because the quest heading out this way, obviously the most dangerous part about the quest is the areas nearer to, you know, Fairbanks onto a circle in there, that's some pretty tough terrain, and even onto, obviously, Eagle. So this race, you're just trying to hold your team together, and with the weather conditions, you know, going super fast is not very conducive to having a solid team in Dawson. So we're just going to travel on down the trail and, you know, see how things go, and we'll go from there.
So in the Iditarod, you can start with 16 dogs. Is there the same in the Yukon Quest, or is it different?
Yeah, you know it's different, Robert. We had 14 for this race. Always a little iffy who your last dog is going to be. I had 3 that I was going through the last week until I finally made my final decisions. A lot of it has to do with whether you're going to go with experience or if you want a younger dog that you want to get experience for the future, and I decided to go with that younger dog. So the final dog to make my team is a little girl, tiny. She's only about 40 pounds. Her name's Savannah. A 2-year-old, you know, swing dog, not necessarily the greatest puller, but she's got that attitude. She's got that girl that loves to jump in your arms, you know, at a flying leap and likes to hug and all that sort of stuff. So she's got like maybe a 4 or 5 foot vertical leap. She's got a lot of amazing Michael Jordan-like athleticism. And she's going to be something in the future, but this year I'm just going to have her along, you know, just to learn the trail and get experience. But you never know. Some of these youngsters really can kick into gear right off the bat. But predominantly up and late, I'll be having Jewel, Juanita, her sister, as well as Delilah. And Jewel and Delilah were my main leaders last year. And, of course, Walter's back. And I'll use him in the hairier situations that we might see out there. From the trail reports, typical jumbo license sections, on the Yukon River, and there's some dicey overflow, Two Rivers area heading towards Rosebud. After Rosebud, coming into 101, seems like it might be a little bit hairy with some overflow in that spot where William Cleeden broke his leg a couple years ago. So that's why I'm definitely going to be, on a very defensive posture the first couple days, because you really, you know, you're concerned about the dogs and your safety as well, and there's no reason to be racing all out, you know, in a 1,000-mile race the first couple of days.
So I believe you're starting 6th out of 24. How does that set for positioning in terms of what you want to do?
Oh, these smaller races, I don't think it really matters. If you ever look at my history as far as Iditarod goes, I typically, in Iditarod, I'm passing 30 to 40, 50 teams in the first day. I definitely like to get to the front of the pack, and I think there's a little bit less traffic that way. With the Quest, there's never really too much traffic to worry about anyways, unless you're doing some of your mountain summits in the beginning of the race, you know, Rosebud or Eagle. It can be, you know, 4 or 5 teams going all at the same time, which is pretty neat, you know, seeing all the headlamps in the dark and stuff. But it can be a little dangerous going downhill. If you're a musher you know, at the top of a mountain going downhill, if you got a team in front of you, you need to give them some slack because that can get a little dangerous. They've had some bad wipeouts on Eagle Summit going down this steep terrain in the past. So I'm definitely trying to stay in my own little zone and do my thing. I don't want to really be getting trapped in other musher soap operas. And I just want to, you know, be with the dogs. And Walter's going to, you know, be the man this year as he always is.
You know, Hugh, I saw something on Facebook just yesterday, the Cat in the Hat dog coats. Are you using those in this race?
I'm actually going to meet with Barb Ann Gaiak. She's from Bethel. She's the president of NEA of Alaska, and I call her my boss with quotations because, you know, she's definitely been great at promoting me and, you know, what I'm all about as far as helping kids achieve their dreams through reading and just through fulfilling, you know, what they're hoping to do with their lives. So I'm meeting with her actually in a little while, and she's going to present me with them. And a little close to race time to be trying out new gear like that. I've got Caitlin Santos makes some really beautiful dog jackets from Wolf Den Kennel that I used the last couple of years. And I know Jake Berkowitz is using those as well. So I'll have some of those. I'm going to take a gander at them today and see what they look like and try them out. What I've been more concerned with, actually, besides the dog jackets, which I definitely will be using eventually, I might wait until Dawson and where it's going to probably be a little bit warmer on the Yukon side to use them because the Wolf's Den are a little bit for colder weather. But I don't know how cold it's going to be in this race. Definitely going to be using those Cat in the Hats in the Iditarod, though. But I'm more concerned with chicken feet. If people don't know what chicken legs are, it's when the dog's legs punch through the snow. If it's crusty on top, and sometimes the top of that snow can sort of rub at the back of their legs, and they can lose a little bit of their fur. So we actually put what we call suspenders with some type of fleece, or people use different types of fabric that is going to protect the dog's legs against the snow. And Jewel's missing a little bit of fur on the back of her front legs, so she'll be wearing these styly little suspenders that my buddy Rick Casillo is bringing up for me from down south in the Willow area. And that it's all about, you know, we have different ways of protecting the dog. Some people use shoulder jackets, but, you know, the obviously the better you take care of them, the better they're going to do in the long run.
So you talked last week, maybe the week before, about a race that's going to be held during the Yukon Quest. What's the name over on the coast? John something or another? What's the name of that race, Hugh?
I'm not sure what the exact name of it is, but it's a tribute to Mitty Johnson, who is the mayor of Unalakleet. Unfortunately, his brother Paul passed away a few months ago, and they're dedicating this race to him. And my buddy Pat Moon, who's from Chicago, is going to be doing the race. He's tied in with the Unalakleet folks this year. And Pat realizes, obviously, how lucky he is. He's got an amazing setup this year. And hats off to all my native friends in Unalakleet for what they're doing for Pat Moon and how they're honoring Paul's spirit. Paul did the Iditarod a few times. He just did it last year, and then he had done it several years ago. And Mitty is, they won the Checkpoint Award this year in Iditarod because Mitty was up there for days on end cooking a meal for every musher in the Iditarod who came through Unalakleet, which there's a lot of mushers in Iditarod. So that's a ways off, though. I'm all about the quest right now, and the quest is its own little baby to deal with. And I'm looking forward to honoring Geronimo's spirit, and as well as my buddy Carl Cochran, who passed away, who had a cabin out on Birch Creek that we get to stay at every year. And there's a lot of spirit to the quest, and that's why I'm really surprised more mushers don't do it. Because if you're an Iditarod musher, I don't care where you are in the world, if you haven't done the Yukon Quest, if you're Robert Sorley or whoever you are, then you haven't done all the mushing that you're capable of doing. And so it's neat to see we got some folks from Russia here this year, got some folks from Norway, and I just hope more people from around the world come and do the quest, because the quest can be difficult at times. There's a lot of bureaucracy involved. You have two different entities in a way because you're two different countries that you're going through, but it's more than worth it in the long run, and that's why I do it every year. This will be my 12th quest since 2000, and I just love doing it.
So we have a question here on the chat room, Hugh. They're asking about what is the fans like in Whitehorse? Is it the same amount as the start, or is it much smaller because it's in a different country?
Oh, not at all. I'd say the Whitehorse banquet year in, year out is twice as large as the Fairbanks banquet. It's massive. And just good turnout everywhere. And I'd say maybe a little bit more European influence. You got a lot of folks flying in from, say, Japan, Germany, what have you. And obviously you have a lot of Alaska contingent that's coming over there that's following the race. And, you know, it's great. Even up until Boston, you're going to get, you know, hundreds of folks coming in to follow the race. And it's almost like a Mardi Gras on wheels. There's a lot of energy, a lot of anxiety, but it's you realize if you're part of the show how lucky you are. And I hope all the officials, the veterinarians, and the mushers all just, you know, stay positive about what we're doing. It's going to be a challenge this year, especially on the Yukon River. There's a couple spots that might not be open that have been in the past. So we're just going to have to deal with that and go with the flow.
Speaking of flying in, you said at the beginning of your show a friend of yours is going to be handling for you, flew in from Hawaii. My question is, why in the world would somebody fly in not only to help on a dog sled race, but leave Hawaii in the middle of winter during snow, blizzards, whatever? What in the world prompted him to come over here and help you out?
Jaime, what do you think? Why are you here?
I can never understand why. I ask myself the same thing when he hits 40 below, but I keep coming back. It's got to be the dogs.
Yeah, Jaime's amazing. Jaime and I did tourism down in Skagway for years and helped Robert Murphy out down there. And I call him the Puerto Rican musher. And my biggest problem with Jaime is just keeping all the girls away from him because they love that Puerto Rican machismo.
There you go. So I know you do have a lot of help helping you out, including your buddy Bruce. And Bruce and I have talked several times over Facebook, and he's doing something interesting along the trail. He's got a blog up for you called Hag Quest, I believe it's called. What's that all about?
Yeah, that was actually Bruce's daughter's idea, Holly, who actually has already written a book about one of my dogs, a dog named Samson. And, yeah, Bruce is going to be trying to do updates as far as how the race is going, my status, what's happening with different mushers. A lot of it, hopefully, we'll be able to get through in this weather out. He's going to be in some forlorn areas where I don't know how great the reception is going to be. But, yeah, Bruce has been one of my main supporters for years now, and I've gone and talked at his school a few times. And he's been my Iditarider before, and he's helped out, you know, with running dogs for about a month or so this year in Tok. And hopefully in the future I'm going to be able to give him a team and let him do maybe a mid-distance race. And Bruce is great. You know, Jaime is here for the color. Bruce is here. He's the he's my main working guy. He's the guy that's going to, you know, be out there shoveling poo at 6 in the morning just because that's what he came here to do, where Jaime, he's still sleeping.
So we kind of have a John Madden, Al Michaels setup then.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I would say Jaime would be a little bit more like Howard Cosell.
There you go. You got to have a little bit of color commentating going on the sides, whether you're helping pick up poop or not. It's always nice to have at least somebody that can divert some of the attention like Howard Cosell and John Madden. So my next question, Hugh, is after this race, I know you're going to settle down, possibly even do a race or so in between the Quest and the Iditarod. And we've asked you this a couple of times. Do you have any plans? I know you don't want to jinx yourself. Any plans for when you're going to be finishing? I'm sure a lot of fans are making their proverbial bets on when you're going to finish.
Oh, I have no clue. The way the weather is, you could never tell. But I don't even remember what Hans's record is, to tell you the truth. But, oh, boy, 9 days? Somewhere in the ballpark, I have really not that great a clue. But I was going to tell you, as far as handlers go, that's a major, major difference between the Quest and Iditarod. These people are a part of the show, and hats off to every handler that's helping out. Obviously, Tamara helped me out for years, and she's going to be in Dawson helping out. And she's obviously with the Quest board now, and she's helping the Quest out a lot this year on the Canadian side. And these handlers are a big part of the show. They got to go and drive the whole route. They got to go to Circle and then drive all the way around to Dawson, set up camp for our 36-hour layover. They pick up all of our extra gear. They have to rake up all the straw. And, you know, they're part of the circus, and it's a great part of the quest. And I think the quest needs to honor how much the handlers do compared to other races. It's pretty amazing, these folks that are traveling in from all over the world, you know, whether it's Hawaii or Norway or wherever, just to be a part of the show. And they're not even running the dogs. They barely even get to see the dogs unless they're resting or coming into a checkpoint. But they just want to be here to be a part of the scene.
Is there something in place for the really low-key musher that may not have a lot of resources, maybe just pretty much running, you know, out of his backyard, so to speak, and he comes up to run a race like the Yukon Quest, and he doesn't have that support network? What happens to a guy like that?
Oh, I tried that 1 year, man. It didn't work out very well. I had to leave the race in Eagle. So doing this race on your own, not a good idea. And it's just, I mean, it's okay to be a hermit. I'm, believe it or not, I like my time alone, and I like my quiet time with the dogs. But for a venture of this, you know, magnitude, you need somebody out there not only helping with the dogs, but just, you know, dealing with the truck issues, and you need gear. You might need an extra sled along the way if there's brakes, and if you don't have a replacement, then you're in trouble. Yeah, it's pretty tough to do it. And if you're a musher out there that is trying to do this on your own, you need to talk to somebody who's been around the block a while and get some advice, or go to the Quest either on the Canadian side or in Fairbanks and say, hey, I need a hand. I'm trying to find some help. And there's plenty of volunteers that would be more than willing to help a musher out during this race. So oftentimes a lot of the mushers don't even find help until, you know, maybe a week or two beforehand. This year, I'm very fortunate. I have a lot of folks that are helping out. I have, Nicole and JJ are here helping out as well. And then I got folks in Dawson helping out, too. So, my buddy John, JD Patan, he's an old Quest musher, is going to be there. And it's a family. So if you're ever having situations, whether it be on the trail or if you have truck issues on the road, you know, it's Alaska, and you're gonna look out for whoever's, you know, in your area, because you never know when it might be your turn when you're looking for a hand.
You know, that was my next question. Have you ever had any handler problems on the trail, like a truck breaking down or something?
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty extreme.
There's all sorts of stuff. I had a handler. Mike Jane was my first handler back in the day. Mike, you know, ended up being the Quest and Iditarod Rookie of the Year just a few years back, and Mike was 18 when he was my handler, and it's pretty funny. He drove the vehicle off the road twice, I think, in Whitehorse. The funniest part about Mike, and the reason I knew he was going to end up being a good musher, is a couple days after I finished the Quest in Whitehorse, I looked out the window of where I was staying at over by Zucchini Hot Springs, and there was Mike Train, this little 18-year-old kid, just a few days after I finished a 1,000-mile race, trying to hook up my dog team and take it for a dog ride. And I remember I sat there and watched because I knew it was going to happen. So he hooked up the team, and the team went about 500 feet, and then they all just laid down. Because obviously, you know, they're a little pooped out, and it wasn't me back there. But he had that desire to do it, and he did well with it. And I've done a few school talks the last couple of days. I was at University Park yesterday, and then I did a talk at LAD this morning. And there's a lot of bright kids out there that I'm sure if they were given the chance or had a mentor or a role model, wouldn't mind being on a dog sled. It's a lot of fun, but it's definitely a lot of responsibility, and it takes a lot of years to figure out what you're doing.
So I have another question for you here from our chat in regards to the handlers. They're asking, is it very similar to a pit crew in NASCAR? Does everybody have a particular job, and is it a requirement that they know that job exactly, or do they switch around?
Not as high-tech as it's not like a speed efficiency mechanism like it is at Indy, where they got to do it like in 17 seconds or whatever. But with our handlers, we can get penalties, get monetary fines if they don't clean up right. As far as caring for the dogs, you're allowed to have one handler while the dogs are resting that is allowed to actually keep an eye on the team to make sure that the dogs aren't, you know, getting loose or having people that are in the area messing with the dogs. But the handler really isn't allowed to actually help you do any of your chores. They really, the official stress is they don't even want the handlers to talk to you that much. It used to be a little bit odd back in the day that officials wouldn't even let you, like, if you were a husband, they wouldn't let you kiss your wife on Valentine's Day and stuff like that. But I think the Quest is maturing slowly, and they're realizing that a few of their rules need to be updated a little bit. But, yeah, it's a great way for the handlers to be a part of the team, but they definitely do not want the handlers to be giving mushers any edge or advantage. And I can understand where they're coming from on that. And I've already instructed my handlers to try to, you know, stay positive, stay focused on, you know, their chores, have a good time, but try to avoid all the gossip and soap opera that unfortunately follows these races. And it's just, I've been doing this for many years, and it's just it's the lore of some of these races is there's just a lot of nonsense out there that really isn't the truth, and it's just really a waste of time. So I just want my guys to be focused on having a good time and taking care of the dogs, really.
Okay, so one last question in regards to handlers from your fans that are listening right now. Is sleep deprivation a problem for the handlers, or are they just partying between checkpoints?
I certainly hope they're not partying too much. I want these guys to have fun. They can watch the Super Bowl and have a beer. But sleep deprivation is a big part of this, and they need to get their rest as well, and that's why I have two people driving so they can rotate. And I told those guys it's amazing what Tamara did over the years, how she was doing that whole drive often by herself, and she did it quite well. But, yeah, if it gets a little sketchy on the road there, we don't want any dangerous situations. If these guys are getting tired or a little sleepy on the road, they should be pulling over and take a little cat nap or a rest break or get some coffee or, you know. It's definitely almost as much a challenge for them in some respects as it is the mushers. But Bruce helped out last year, so he knows his way around. And my buddy John Larson Johnson from North Pole, we call him Fan Man, and he's all over Facebook promoting not only me but all the mushers, and that's why we all love him. And he's going to be out there going to Circle with us, and I wanted to have him there driving to Circle because if you've ever done that drive before, it's a pretty hairy stretch of road. And John will be great to have out there because he's like all of us. You know, we're all just about helping to promote the sport, and hopefully the sport can continue to evolve.
So anything else you want to mention about the race itself before we get into the sled dog of the week? And what I'd like to do in the sled dog section of the week is, if you could, because a lot of people ask this, about who's on your team, maybe by name, so people can follow, hey, you know, this is Jewel or Walter or whoever. Anything else you want to mention about the race before we go into that last segment, Hugh?
Yeah, I want to tell you that my biggest dilemma, and I've been going back and forth, has been driving me crazy, and I was hoping to have a sled here, but it didn't make it. My buddy Darren Nelson at Cosby is still working on it. Hopefully I'll have it by Iditarod. So I've been going back and forth over what type of sled do I want to use. I've got an older style Bernie Willis that's a little bit bigger, and then I've got my typical tiny Han sled that I've been using, and probably going to stick with a Han sled. I was talking about Dave Dalton, another, you know, he's done 22 of these, and he's used his Han sled 8 or 9 years in a row. And mine's a little bit tiny. I used it last year and had no issues with it, but we've got a pretty massive stretch of trail this year, and I'm definitely going to practice packing it today just to make sure everything's kosher, because we're not going to have a dog drop at Slavin's this year. So we have a 170-mile stretch to Eagle, and Trout Creek, the fellow that runs that every year might not be there this year, so we might not be able to use that cabin as well. So it's going to be interesting as far as that stretch of trail. Probably be doing a lot of camping. The sled issue has definitely been a lot on my mind, and luckily I have a fine, decent team this year that I'm not as stressed out about that. But I'm definitely going to make sure that the sled is in proper order before we hit the trail here tomorrow. As far as the dogs go, as I mentioned earlier, you got Jewel, who did both races last year. Juanita, her sister, finished every race I did last year, over 3,200 miles worth. Then you have Delilah. Then her brothers are Tyler, Tolliver, and Ellsworth, and they've all done at least 5,000 or 6,000 milers. They're 5-year-olds. Then you have George and Amigo, our Jewel and Juanita's brothers. They'll be coming along. You got Rocky. He's one of my new superstars. He's a youngster. He's going on 3, and he's pretty solid boy. And then with Rocky. The other rookie I was mentioning was Havana. She's a little two-year-old. She's the youngest out of this whole group of dogs. Gringle's the older dog I got from John Baker. He's real solid. Sicily did both races last year. She's a Ray Reddington dog that I got a few years back that's out of some Robert Sorley stuff, dog named Barley. And who else am I forgetting in there? Oh, sorry, Tamara. And, of course, Tamara's little boyfriend, Nathan. He's the dog, if everybody ever sees pictures of the dog, he's the dog with a star on his face. Been featured in a lot of Iditarod videos. And, obviously, the guy that I don't need to talk about is my main man, Walter. And Walter, you know, these dogs, people don't realize, the biggest mistake you can be listening to this show down in the lower 48 if you're in some civilized area of this world is this isn't your dog. This is no house pet. This is a beast of nature. These are animals can be civilized. They're indoors right now, but at heart, they're wild creatures. And they feel, as a musher, they feel a lot of what you're feeling. It's like an incredible bond that is just amazing. Because we spend so much energy and time with them that Walter's known about this race for probably a week or two now. They're smarter than most people I hang out with. Handlers have excluded, of course, boys. But Walter's just, you know, he's whenever I'm driving down the road, he's right on my lap staring out the window and giving me the look. And he misses his sister Annie a little bit, but Annie, we're saving up for Iditarod, and she's back in Toke, and my friend Ronnie's taking care of her, and I miss her, of course, but, you know, each dog we have it for a different purpose this year, and we'll be holding Annie back for later on, but it's a nice team, and more than what place I finish, I just want to make it to the finish line this year, obviously, and have a nice-looking squad, and I know a lot of people want me to do well, but, you know, it's really about the journey. That's what Bud Smith would always teach Ramey and Sim. And if you're winning races and not having fun, why are you even doing it? So for me, it's just about, you know, doing our best, and we'll see what we're really made of this year.
Okay, last question for the show, again, comes from one of your fans. And I've always thought about this myself with all of the guys in every sport. You often see this. Is do you have any particular pre-race rituals of any type that you do before every race, whether it be a particular drink or a particular thing you say to your dogs or anything you'd like to share regarding a pre-race ritual right before you go out?
Usually I slap myself on the face and say, wake up. No, usually like yesterday I did it. I'm going to do it again right here in about an hour. Whenever these boys get the fire going, I crank out the sauna, dude, and I really try to, you know, loosen up the body, stretch out, get the limbs going. I've been quite sick the last couple of weeks doing all these school talks. I catch a lot of viruses from kids, unfortunately, whoever I'm meeting, and so I've been trying to deal with that. But besides saunas, I'd say without question the main ritual I do, Robert, and I brought you last year. You remember this quite well before Iditarod. I go and listen to my hero, and that's Hobo Jim. And so I'll be at Ivory's tonight. You know, when Hobo Jim talks, that's my gospel. I feel like his words are coming straight from heaven. And he's the reason a lot of us came to Alaska. And if you haven't listened to any Hobo Jim's poetry, then you're missing out on some pretty amazing works of art. And the beautiful thing is, you know, he's had the Iditarod Trail song for years now. But this year he says he's got a Yukon Quest song that he's going to be coming out with tonight. So I have a feeling that Ivory Jackson's going to be rocking. Folks back home would think we're all in our bed sleeping before one of these races starts, you know, because we want to rest up and all that. And that might be some mushers, but those aren't any mushers that I hang out with. I mean, I think real mushers, they're enjoying this, and they're so full of energy that they can't sleep. So there'll be a lot of Quest mushers out there tonight honoring not only Hobo, but Ivory Jackson, my buddy Dick Ellsworth, who and his wife Joni, who have been big supporters of the Quest for years now. So I'm looking forward to seeing Hobo tonight, and then it's time to get the show on the road.
Well, we wish you the best of luck. We'll make sure that we have you on after the show, possibly even talk in Dawson. At least that's the plan for right now. And make sure that one of your handlers or whoever has cell service out that way gets in contact with me by Facebook or whatever, and we'll make sure we get you on if that's what you want to do in Dawson. But definitely in Whitehorse, we'll do our next Gypsy Mushers show. And you can follow Hugh on Facebook. I'm sure there's going to be tons of updates there, as well as his handler, Bruce, at the HagQuest blog. I'm not sure the address there, but I'm sure it'll
be on Hugh. How may stop making out with Juanita?
I'm sure it will be on the page. So, Hugh, best of luck to you out there. I'm sure that you'll do well. You've done this forever, but never take it for granted. I know you've said that before, because nature can slap you in the face, can't it?
Oh, yeah, man. And definitely Geronimo is definitely the biggest part of this race this year, so this is for him.
All right, man. Take care. We'll talk to you as soon as you can, whether it be Dawson or in Whitehorse. This is Robert Forto on behalf of our host, UConn Quest veteran, starting the race tomorrow in Fairbanks, Hugh Neff. We'll talk to you later. Goodbye.
Yeah.